The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. Today, we're starting to welcome to Oprah Insider. Oprah on Teens and Technology, and this article is by Oprah Winfrey. Hello, Insiders, and happy Sunday. Last week, we launched a new The Life You Want class about the ongoing crisis in teen mental health. Honestly, it was sobering to learn what young people are up against in these times. The reality is that teens are dealing with things that we in previous generations never had to. The dangers of social media, the pressures of selfie culture, the relentless pull of our smartphones. One of my guests was Jonathan Haidt, an NYU professor and author of the new bestseller, The Anxious Generation. His book spells out how Generation Alpha, as they're known, are paying a hefty price for being the first to grow up with this technology. As Haidt explains it, we are overprotecting our kids in the real world and underprotecting them online. Where once kids would go out to meet friends and come home when the streetlights flickered on, they're now kept safe at home, where they're sucked into their harmful screens. My other guest was Dr. Becky Kennedy, who has a devoted following for her parenting insights. She had everyone in our audience nodding in agreement when she said, "Kids have been spending more time on their phones, which is a world of instant gratification with no effort. As a result, they've missed out on experiencing the grit of the real world, in which you have to put in a lot of effort for delayed gratification at best." If you're a parent, a grandparent, or an aunt or uncle, I hope this class will leave you not just wiser about teens and technology, but also with solid steps you can take to protect and help redirect the young people in your life. Let me know your thoughts about the class in the comments below. Have a great week, everybody, and go well. So there are some comments in the Let's Talk section below that article. Nick Roninelli. Hello, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the beautiful blossoming trees around you. There's nothing more stunning. This show has been lingering in my mind since I watched it in the audience, especially as the father of an 11-year-old boy. Like many parents, I've sometimes let social media entertain my son when I'm busy. But a profound moment of realization came when I discovered he had learned about the birds and bees through social media instead of from me. The pain of missing out on guiding him through such a critical life conversation was deeply upsetting. I could cry thinking about it. Since that incident, I've become more vigilant. Thankfully, the virtual really headsets have speakers which help me overhear an adult asking my son a very inappropriate question. I've also witnessed my son being bullied and troublingly taking on the role of the bully in online battle games. These situations are tough as a parent and make it clear we need to act. We can't just sit back and leave our kids unprotected. It's our job to step in, though it's not easy. This show has made it clear that we can't ignore the risks of social media. It can hurt our kids, now and in the future. Figuring out how to parent with all this new technology is hard, and we're the first generation of parents to face this challenge. This show needs to go prime time. Mary Frumperth. Hello, Oprah and Insiders. In my day, the saying about children was, "You are seen but not heard." If we went visiting, I had a little brown case that had books, farm animals, coloring pencils, and paper. I thought it was harsh, but after watching the teen mental health crisis, I realized how much this taught me. When you see a 12-month-old baby that already knows how to swipe a smartphone and young toddlers and children sitting in restaurants on tablet devices, never being taught or socialized, it is disheartening. It is the new age parental escape permitting children to have free license on devices. My daughter and I are so on board together with my grandchildren. Loads of books, playtime outside and at parks, playdates, chess club, choir, and sports activities. Very, very limited television, if any, each day. It is valuing and loving their one precious childhood enough to put the effort in. Great class, Oprah. And this last one is from BIL2719. As grandparents of two teenagers and one approaching that milestone, this topic is of major concern to us. I'm grateful for all the knowledge we can get to be aware, proactive, and reactive. Thank you, Oprah, for the deep dive into this. We're over in work and money now. Check out this must-attend entrepreneurial event of the year. This June, Chase for Business's annual Make Your Move Summit returns to support entrepreneurs pursuing their dreams. And this article is by Rory Evans. Anyone can have a great idea, but not everyone can turn that idea into a successful business. Being an entrepreneur takes grit and determination, but most importantly, it takes help. That's exactly why Chase for Business launched its Make Your Move Summit. Attending events like the Make Your Move Summit provides business owners with valuable opportunities to expand networks, hear from some of the top minds in business, and focus on your why, says Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business. At the inaugural three-day event held this past November in Frisco, Texas, innovators, industry leaders, athletes, and celebrities shared insights on how to craft the perfect pitch, what to make of the recent warp speed advancements in artificial intelligence, and how to thrive despite macroeconomic challenges. Our hope is that entrepreneurs will take what they learn and return to their teams with new, creative ideas to help drive their business forward, says Walter. Honestly, you should have been there, but for those who missed it, there's good news. Chase for Business will soon hold its second annual Make Your Move Summit from June 10 to 12, 2024, at the Oceanfront Terranea Resort in Rancho Palos Verdes, California. Here are three key reasons to put it on your calendar. Custom curated programming. To Make Your Move Summit offers across to and insights from successful professionals offering advice from firsthand experience, last year's program featured a number of marquee names, and this year's speaker list promises more of the same. And you can pick and choose which programs, seminars, and breakout sessions you wish to attend. From building your dream career and the power of your brand to insights on how to take your business to the next level, allowing you to focus on the advice needed to help propel your business forward. Unique networking and activations. Perhaps the greatest resource provided to attendees is one another. At the Make Your Move Summit event, you have the chance to mingle with other business owners and tap networking experts for impactful business growing strategies, as well as explore the local Chase for Business marketplace, where local owners share both wares and wisdom. For attendee Deborah Moore, founder of Mama Moore's Gourmet Popcorn, these opportunities exceeded her expectations. Attending the summit and participating in its business marketplace is such an empowering experience, she says, adding how helpful Chase has been in the success of her business. At this year's event, Chase for Business plans to debut an on-site solution center aimed to empower owners with a range of payment, credit card, and banking solutions for their businesses. One-of-a-kind entertainment and relaxation. All work and no play doesn't make for well-balanced inspiration. That's why summit attendees are treated to social time and entertainment and can even enjoy a free concert to close out the day. Purposeful downtime is also worked right into the schedule. At this year's event, business owners stay at the resort will have access to the California property's full menu of offerings, including hiking, paddleboarding, yoga, spinning, and spa time. Another highlight is the charity golf tournament, which gives participants the chance to get advice from celebrities posted around the green. Whether you mine them for insights on your approach shot or your business plan, well, that's up to you. If you're interested in attending this year's Make Your Move Summit on June 10, 11, and 12 at the Terranea, and that's spelled T-E-R-R-A-N-E-A Resort, and Rancho Palos Verdes, California, you can go on and register, and you'll discover all the innovative ways Chase for Business supports business owners. You can also visit their site, which is chase.com/business. Over in beauty and hair, 10 DIY hair masks for growth and thickness. They also treat dry scalp, dandruff, and damage. And this article is by Brigitte Early, and that's B-R-I-G-I-T-T. Keeping up with a hair care routine is an investment. If you're looking for an affordable and easy way to take care of your hair and promote longer, healthier strands, try a DIY hair mask. To be clear, there's no overnight solution to creating more strength and thickness. And minoxidil, the active ingredient in Rogaine, is the only FDA-approved drug clinically proven to regrow hair, says Howard Sobel, MD, a board-certified dermatologist. If you're suffering from extreme loss or thinning, it's best to check in with your dermatologist for help. However, that extra avocado lying around or the banana that went a little too brown before you could eat them can help hydrate and infuse strands with nourishing ingredients that promote overall health and, in turn, length. They can also help improve other concerns like dryness, dullness, and breakage. Ready to give it a shot? Keep reading for easy DIY hair masks you can make using ingredients you likely already have in your kitchen. Castor oil hair mask. Use it to treat dry scalp and dandruff. Celebrity stylist Michelle Cleveland recommends this mask because castor oil is rich in fatty acids that moisturize and has antimicrobial properties that make it a worthy treatment for dry scalp and dandruff. The ingredients are 1 teaspoon of castor oil. Directions. Put cold-pressed castor oil in a small bowl. Heat in the microwave for about 10 seconds. It should be warm, not hot. Using your fingertips, massage the castor oil into your scalp and down the hair shaft. Leave on for 15 minutes, rinse well, then shampoo. Cinnamon and coconut oil. Use it to treat thinning and breakage. The spice works to stimulate blood circulation and promote hair growth and strength, while the coconut oil is rich in fatty acids, helping to further repair, says Melissa Paverini, a hairstylist with Cricut. The ingredients, 1 teaspoon ground cinnamon and 1 teaspoon of coconut oil. Directions, blend ingredients together well. Apply the mask onto your roots and part, massaging into your scalp. Let mask sit for 30 to 45 minutes, then rinse with warm water. Coconut oil, lemon, yogurt, and egg. Use it to treat dry hair. Cleveland says the egg in this DIY mask has plenty of vitamins to nourish strands, plus contains hydrating ingredients like coconut oil and yogurt. Ingredients. 1 teaspoon of coconut oil, juice of 1 lemon, 1/2 cup of plain yogurt, and 1 egg. Directions. Mix all of the ingredients together in a bowl until well combined. Use your fingertips to apply from the scalp down to your ends. Cover with a warm towel or shower cap to lock in the natural heat from the scalp. Leave on for 15 to 20 minutes. Rinse well with warm water and then shampoo as usual. Coconut oil, honey, and avocado oil. Use it to treat frizzy hair. The fatty acids, minerals, and antioxidant properties of the mixture will help reduce frizz and add shine, says Brian Anthony, an advanced designer at Salon Ava Michelle in Boston. Ingredients. 1 teaspoon refined coconut oil, 1 teaspoon of 100% pure honey, 1 tablespoon of avocado oil. Directions. Mix all the ingredients together in a bowl until well combined. Use your fingertips to apply, starting at your scalp and working down to your ends. Leave on for 10 minutes. Rinse with warm water, then shampoo with a clarifying shampoo and your usual conditioner. Honey, avocado, yogurt, brown sugar, bananas, and apple cider vinegar. Use it to treat damaged hair. Honey is loaded with vitamins and minerals to treat split strands, says Fred Connors, owner of Fred Salon. Plus, avocados are packed with essential fats and biotin, while bananas contain silica for additional hair-strengthening properties. Ingredients: 1 tablespoon of honey, 1 tablespoon of avocado, 1 tablespoon of plain yogurt, 1 tablespoon of brown sugar, 1 tablespoon of banana, 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar. Directions: using a fork, mix these ingredients together in a bowl until they form a smooth, even paste. Using your fingertips, massage the formula into your scalp, working your way down to your ends. Wrap hair in a plastic cap to keep the mask in place and seal in the heat from your scalp. Let sit for at least 20 minutes, then rinse and shampoo as usual. Coconut oil and honey. Use to treat dry, damaged hair. This simple mask will make frizzy hair and split ends soft, shiny, and smooth, says Nicole Jones, a hairstylist with Cricut. Ingredients: 1 tablespoon of organic, unrefined coconut oil and 1 tablespoon of raw honey. Directions: mix the ingredients in a small mixing bowl until well combined. Apply to wet or dry hair, taking care to focus on the ends, since that's where you're most likely to see the most damage. Let sit for about 30 minutes, then rinse and shampoo as usual. Coconut cream, cocoa powder, and cinnamon. Use it to treat thinning hair. This mask works to promote thickness thanks to antioxidant-rich dark chocolate, theobromine to boost growth-stimulating blood flow, and cinnamon that promotes circulation around hair follicles, says Dr. Lazile of Happy Curls, Happy Girls. And that name is spelled capital D-E and then capital L with an apostrophe I-S-L-E. Ingredients: 5 ounces of coconut cream, 1/2 cup of no-sugar-added cocoa powder, and 3/4 tablespoon of powdered cinnamon. How to DIY. Whisk all ingredients together in a bowl until smooth and creamy. Apply to damp hair from root to tip. Cover with a plastic cap and let sit for at least 30 minutes. Rinse with warm water, then shampoo as usual. Apple cider vinegar. Use it to treat flakes and itchy scalp. Thanks to its acidic nature and antimicrobial properties, an apple cider vinegar rinse helps cleanse your scalp and restore shine, says Kali Ferrara, a hairstylist at the Salon Project in NYC. Ingredients: 1 part raw unfiltered apple cider vinegar and 10 parts water. Directions: mix the 2 ingredients, apply to wet hair. After conditioning, massage into the scalp and let sit for 5 minutes, rinse well. Avocado and banana. Use it to treat dry, damaged hair. This mask is a deep conditioning treatment that contains nutrient-rich ingredients to add protein back into the hair, making it look super shiny and healthy, says Marissa D'Arezzo, a hairstylist with Cricut. Ingredients: 2 tablespoons of banana and 2 tablespoons of avocado. Directions: using a fork, mash banana and avocado together until smooth. Apply the mixture from roots to ends to thoroughly saturate each section of hair. Let sit for 15 minutes, then rinse out. Sugar and olive oil. Use it to treat dry hair and dandruff. Sugar is a great exfoliant for the scalp and hair shaft to clear out product buildup. Think caked on dry shampoo. And treat any flaking, says Ferrara. As the sugars dissolves, the oil delivers healthy fats and emollients to dry scalp and hair for moisturizing benefits. Ingredients: 2 tablespoons of sugar and 5 tablespoons of olive oil. Directions: stir the 2 ingredients together, being careful not to fully dissolve the sugar. Work the mixture into your scalp to dissolve the sugar gradually, moving down your hair until you reach your ends. Rinse out immediately and shampoo. This next article is from Culture and News in TV and Movies. Whoopi Goldberg asks Cheryl Lee Ralph to return for Sister Act 3. The pair were co-stars in the second film. This article is by Jane Burnett. As someone who has sparkled in classic films and TV shows for decades, Abbott Elementary's Cheryl Lee Ralph knows a thing or two about aging with flair. In fact, the Emmy-winning actress reminisced about being in 1993's Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, with co-star Whoopi Goldberg on The View this week. Although they were both stunned that the film recently hit its 30-year anniversary, it's clear that they've maintained a close relationship since then. "First of all, it was so good that it was not the last time we would work together," Ralph said before walking down memory lane. Then Goldberg shocked her with 2 requests. "The producers here at The View are working on putting together a reunion," Goldberg said, referring to how the show plans to honor the film's 30th anniversary. "And we're going to try to get as many cast members on and to share memories from the movie. Would you do us the honor of coming back? And as soon as we know when it is, we'll do that. But I will also do this. You know we're in the process of putting together Sister Act 3. Will you come be a part of it, whatever it is?" It's clear that the film franchise holds a special place in both of their hearts. And this isn't the only time Goldberg has mentioned a third Sister Act film. She has spoken about it over the years, mentioning other celebs she'd love to join the cast. Goldberg also teased it online during an international trip to meet Pope Francis at the Vatican last fall. In 2020, Disney officially announced that the third film was in development, with Tyler Perry as a producer. And Goldberg has both a producer and a cast member. It will be released on Disney Plus. In the meantime, we'll stay tuned for the Sister Act 2 reunion and watch Ralph play beloved teacher Barbara Howard on Season 3 of Abbott Elementary, which premiered this week. And that article was edited due to time. Next, we're heading over to books. What Birdwatching Taught Me About Motherhood. In her new book, Lessons for Survival, Emily Robitaux writes about finding nature in New York City and connection in a changing climate. The perfect Earth Day read. And this article is by Emily Robitaux. Here's what I can tell you about the Wilson's Warbler, which I photographed at a storefront church called Iglesia del Dios el Refugio. They typically avoid the interior of the dense forest, preferring scrubby, overgrown clearings and thin woods, staying low in semi-open areas and breeding as far north as the timberline, in thickets, second growth and bogs, along wooded streams, moist tangles, low shrubs, groves of willows, and alders near ponds. They nest from coast to coast in Canada, but are far more common in the West. In the Rockies and westward, Wilson warblers are often the most abundant migrants in late spring. Their young are fed by both parents, but brooded by the female alone. Their diet consists mostly of insects, including bees, beetles, caterpillars, aphids, and some berries and spiders. 8 to 13 days after hatching, young warblers leave the nest. Their nest is usually on the ground, often at the base of shrubs, sunken in sedges or moss, and is shaped like an open cup made of dead leaves and grass, lined with fine grass and hair. Their scientific name is Cartulina pusilla. They are known as Chipe corona negra, after their black crown in Mexico, where they overwinter. If global warming keeps apace, 61% of their range will be lost. Here's what I can tell you about our habitat in northern Manhattan. I nest in a rented three-room apartment with my mate and my young on the sixth floor of a mid-rise apartment building with 40 units. Around the corner from a commuter bus terminal run by the Port Authority, and one block from the on-ramp to the George Washington Bridge. In a neighborhood choked with poverty and highways, the Trans-Manhattan Expressway, the Henry Hudson Parkway, and the Harlem River Drive. We will talk to our young at 7 and 9 years old, after the murder of George Floyd, about how to protect themselves from the police, who disproportionately apprehend black and brown youth in our habitat. Among our kind, this grim warning is known as the talk. The walls of our nest are covered in artwork collected by us or made by our young. Our young share a bunk bed in a room that fits little else. Our nest is blessed by stacks of books, the sounds of merengue and bachata outside on the street, western light, views of the rooftops and parapets of the buildings around us, studded with boiler pipes belching black smoke from heating oil number 4, and the wide open sky over the Hudson River, which we cannot see. In the long hallway, cluttered with shoes and boots, is an umbrella stand with 3 janky umbrellas and a rolled-up poster of Frederick Douglass, which sometimes our young unroll and say looks like Grandpa, and other times leave rolled up like a tube to use as a telescope or a sword. Our diet includes Chinese takeout from Great Wall, roast chicken from El Malecon, and pupusas from Mi Paso Centro Americano. On Halloween, our young eat candy they forage by trick-or-treating from the mom-and-pop shops along the business thoroughfare of Broadway. Across the street from the bus terminal is the church where we married, where we baptized our young, and where an undocumented neighbor named Amanda Morales took refuge for months with her American-born children as part of the sanctuary movement to avoid deportation to Guatemala by federal immigration agents. 2 blocks north of the Wilson's Warbler mural on Amsterdam Avenue sits an office of WEACT for Environmental Justice, an organization that empowers low-income people of color to advocate for healthy communities. It is well documented that some of the most polluted environments in the nation are where people of color live, work, play, and pray. For instance, a recent environmental health report on northern Manhattan by WEACT stated that as a result of risks including poor quality from heavy diesel truck traffic, dirty boilers, power generation plants, and polluting municipal infrastructure like bus depots and sewage treatment plants, Harlem has a childhood asthma hospitalization rate 6 times the national and 3 times the citywide average. Another recent report from the NAACP and the Clean Air Task Force showed that black Americans are 75% more likely than other Americans to live in fence-lined communities sited near facilities producing hazardous waste. A recent study by the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA's National Center for Environmental Assessment, found that regardless of their income level, black Americans are exposed to higher levels of air pollution than white Americans, 1.5 times as much of the pollution from burning fossil fuels as the population at large. I am the mother of black children in America. It's not possible for me to consider the threats posed to birds without also considering the threats posed to us. And there's a book that accompanies this article, Lessons for Survival by Emily Raboteau, and that's spelled Raboteau, and it's now $25 at Amazon. Over in lifestyle now, a search for Sukkah at Narada Tented Camp, one writer reflects on happiness in the jungle. and this is by Sophia Lodato. I recently participated in a group meditation where the instructor told us to think on the term sukha, a Sanskrit word. It's not quite translatable to English. Something like happiness, pleasure, or ease might come closest. It occurred to me during our session, not for the first time, how little I prioritize feeling sukha in my day-to-day life. Whether because of my physiology, a high-octane life in NYC, or some combination of both. In fact, the last time I'd really felt at ease for a prolonged period of time was during a recent trip to Costa Rica on an aptly called Sukha Retreat at Narada Tented Camp. Nestled in a canopy of palm leaves and flowering trees, with views of the majestic Arena volcano from every angle, Tented Camp is one of three hotels on Narada's sprawling property and was our residence for the retreat. As my partner and I quickly realized, tented is a loose term. Before arriving, I'd had what I now realize was a wild idea that we would be sleeping in actual tents. Remnants of my years at a wilderness school may have gotten in my head. But these rooms are closer to cabanas, with taut canvas fabric in place of walls, the ceilings sloping up to a point, and moody lighting that all create a tent-like feel. Nayara is a luxury hotel in the middle of the jungle, so it's no surprise that everything there exudes beauty. But there's something particularly distinctive about how the hotel itself mingles with the nature around it. It's not just in the style, a traditional Costa Rica bohemian mixed with a modern woodsy feel, but the way the buildings intertwine in an open-air harmony with the local habitat, blending so seamlessly that it's as if the two have always existed together. And actually they have. The local forest was once demolished to make way for a pasture, but Nayara committed to reforesting the jungle that once existed and has rebuilt and restored the ecosystem. When it comes to sustainable design, it's hard to beat a place that has painstakingly cultivated so many trees and provided a home to native species, birds and sloths galore. Proof of their commitment to conservation is living and breathing all around you. The ubiquitous Costa Rican saying, pura vida, pure life, is not an exaggeration there. Though there was something I was unprepared for. This was a sukha retreat. Yes, but it was also a yoga retreat. In fact, the yoga pavilion was barely a 2-minute walk from our room, circular and open-aired as if suspended in the middle of the forest. Laura, the hotel's wellness director and our de facto guide during the retreat, led free classes every morning for all guests. I, with arm strength comparable to dried spaghetti, took one look at the setup and was instantly worried the classes would exceed my ability. This wasn't the case at all. Laura perfectly tailored our classes to our individual limits. We were pushed, but not shoved. Through some vinyasa flow, the first exercise I'd done in a long time that actually resulted in my feeling energized. The rest of our time was pure relaxation. In addition to the yoga classes, Laura led us through a handful of sukha-related rituals designed to help us settle into our bodies. We rubbed clay from the Arena volcano all over ourselves to cleanse our skin. We meditated together during the partial eclipse that occurred over the weekend. We journaled about our experiences in nature. We ate every meticulously curated meal together. The food, by the wonderful chef Mohammed Ternanini, was light, healthy, and delicious, inspired in part by local cuisine, but also drawing influence from some unique places. My partner, who's from the Balkans, got to eat a handful of Albanian-inspired meals he hasn't tasted in years. It's easier to feel sukha in a place as lovely as Tented Camp. It was also easier to do the things that our brand and that Oprah herself has always coveted, not just living well, but living with intention. The two exist in a positive feedback loop, each one helping to create the other. In Niyara's case, living so well makes it that much easier to live purposefully. You wake up in the morning and are instantly grounded in nature, with the trees around you and the view of a Reno just a step outside your room. You aren't rushing to any decisions or even stressing about them, at least not that much, because it's just easy to enjoy the present moment. I know I can't exactly take the Costa Rican jungle back to the concrete one, but at the very least, I can think back to that sukha I experienced at Niyara and try, day by day, to feel it here. This article comes from Lifestyle, but the Wellness section. Graduate to the next level of happiness with these lessons in self-compassion. Martha Beck has 5 courses you can take to move on from self-defeating practices. This article is by Martha Beck. Years ago, after being swindled by a business associate, I became so confused and angry that I hired a life coach. She listened compassionately while I whined and then said, "Martha, I want you to pick a day when you'll be over this. It could be in a week or a year, but that will be your graduation day. Once it comes, you're done with the subject." I sort of missed the more therapeutic, let's examine every tiny nuance of your feelings, but I gamely picked the next day. That night I complained one last time, then shut my pie hole and got on with showing myself some compassion. That graduation was more empowering than earning my PhD. It was so fortifying to achieve a degree of mastery over my self-pity that I went on to graduate from several other dysfunctional attitudes. In no case were years of grueling coursework required. Since the word graduation comes from gradus, the Latin word for step, we might say we graduate every time we step forward without going back. If you've been specializing in any of the following difficult subjects, you too are probably ready to step into an advanced degree in happiness. Self-criticism. The single best way to improve our well-being is to show kindness towards ourselves and others. Since most of us have more difficulty with the former, I recommend that you focus first on graduating from self-criticism. Think of something mean you tell yourself and choose a date to begin replacing that thought with a compassionate option. Instead of fuming, "I'm so stupid," try saying, "I'm overwhelmed, but if I relax and breathe, I can figure this out." Instead of hating your body, pat it and say, "Thanks for being an incredibly complex machine that carries me through life." You'll find that kind thoughts lead to more profound wisdom than cruel ones. Humorlessness. Laughter's physiological and psychological benefits have been the topic of many studies, all of which are really unfunny. So let's cut to the punchline. Amping up your daily laughter rate may reduce stress, boost immunity, and increase joy. I suggest that you start by immersing yourself in hilarious YouTube videos. Search for "Babies Laughing" or "Woman Virtual Reality Roller Coaster." Distraction. Not so long ago, telling someone you wanted to be more present was weird, like saying you wanted to keep your teeth in your mouth. Wherever you go, there you are, right? Wrong. Most of us rarely settle into the moment because we're too busy brooding over the past or fantasizing or fretting about the future. Asian philosophers have long pointed out that this is a terrible way to live, but many Westerners still find it strange to consciously focus on the here and now, like laughter. However, this simple, though not always easy, process may help heal our minds and bodies. You can graduate into greater peace by establishing a presence practice. Set a time each day to stop and bring your full attention to whatever is going on around you and within you. Just 5 minutes daily is enough. Even if you take baby steps, you're still moving forward. Self-deception. If an airplane loses its structural integrity, the proper alignment of all its parts, it may fall right out of the sky. This is metaphorically true for us as well. Integrity can mean the difference between soaring and crashing. I advise you to start simple by telling yourself the truth, even about little things. If you say, "I just love to run," yet repeatedly postpone workouts due to excessive sunshine, try saying instead, "I know exercise is good for me, but I dread it." Feel that subtle energy shift? Paradoxically, life often flows more easily when you frankly admit it's hard. When you can confess small truths, the bigger ones tend to pop out, setting you on a path to inner freedom. Fear. C.S. Lewis once wrote that we can never be sure of our virtues, like honesty or compassion, until we face our fears and put them to the test. Over time, we can build our capacity for courage. Again, the key is to start small. What would you do if you weren't afraid? March for peace? Sing in public? Tell someone you love them? Choose one thing from your list, and on graduation day, do it. Then choose something a bit scarier. Then a bit scarier than that. Each time, you'll get more comfortable, and when you master bravery, every other higher degree will be within your grasp. These subjects may be challenging, but once you start reframing your perspective and lean into allowing self-compassion, I know you'll graduate with highest honors. And in my experience, each diploma brings a deep sense of accomplishment that motivates you to tackle the next issue. So pick a date, plan a party, and maybe buy yourself a graduation present. Then step forward into your higher degree of happiness. Let the commencement commence. This article is in the wholeness section of Lifestyle. The five stages of post-traumatic growth. Here's how to honor the beauty within your brokenness and turn it into strength. By Edith Shiro, PSYD. I grew up in a community of immigrants and refugees, many escaping violent and oppressive regimes. My grandparents on both sides of my family were among them. My father's parents were Syrian refugees who escaped with their six young children and walked all the way from Aleppo into Israel. They stopped long enough for my grandmother to give birth to my father and then kept going. My maternal grandparents were Holocaust survivors from Romania who experienced unspeakable atrocities during the war. Their entire families were wiped out in the Nazi death camps. My parents are Jewish immigrants who broke free of political, religious, and social oppression and made their way to Venezuela, where I was born. Even as a young girl, I noticed that people seemed to be affected by their experiences in different ways. Some people had lost all meaning in their lives. They were stuck in their trauma, racked by survivors' guilt, bitter and deeply depressed. Others bounced back more quickly, eager to assimilate into the culture of their new homeland. Some of them gave up their language and their names to put their past behind them and keep moving forward, and they succeeded. Then there were those who seemed to be growing beyond who they were before. They were the ones who fascinated me. They seemed so connected and present. They were active members of our community and had a keen appreciation for all that life had to offer. They felt their lives were enriched because of what they had been through, not in spite of it. I was curious. I wanted to know why it was that people could have similar experiences but vastly different responses to those experiences. How trauma could have the power to destroy and also the power to transform. Nothing epitomized that paradox for me more than my Romanian grandparents. My grandmother, Nana, was a beautiful woman with a brilliant, creative mind. She spoke several languages and spent much of her time working, drawing, and reading, and cooking delicious meals for her family. Inwardly, however, she suffered greatly. Nana talked about the war often, the pain and fear she experienced, the horror of witnessing her family members being shot and killed, her guilt at being in the line where lives were spared. In many ways, the painful reminders of her past, which Nana relived in her mind and through the stories she told, got in her way of enjoying the present. My grandfather, Lalu, Nana's husband, whose wartime traumas were very similar to hers, experienced life to the fullest. Lalu had such joie de vivre. He loved to travel the world, was a prodigious reader of philosophy, and kept a diary he could pass on to his grandchildren. He taught us to be grateful for the little things in life and not to take anything for granted. He never forgot the past, nor did he minimize the suffering of so many. But he refused to let it intrude on the present. He used to say his past experiences gave his life a sense of meaning and purpose, and he was kinder and wiser because of that. He freed himself from the pain of his past, choosing to transform his suffering into joy and embracing every opportunity to learn and grow. I know, it seems strange to even suggest that something positive could come out of such suffering, but it's true. It's called post-traumatic growth. I've facilitated it countless times with patients who have endured unspeakable acts of violence or suffered debilitating loss, addictions, heartbreak, or discrimination and macroaggressions leveled against them because of their race, gender expression, or sexual orientation. Many of them have gone through profound growth and transformation. To step onto the path to growth requires a radical acceptance of the trauma. Trauma is a physical and emotional response to an experience that overwhelms you. It's not the event itself. It's how you interpret your experience, the resources you have to cope, and your ability to process it. When you aren't able to work through those emotions, they get stuck in your body and remain there as though the event were happening in real time. Post-traumatic growth is absolutely possible. However, it's not an easy path. It requires you to let go of old beliefs and challenge your core assumptions, to question how the world works, what kind of person you are, and the kind of life you are living. It's not about bouncing back to where you were. It's about bouncing forward, creating something new that honors the beauty within your brokenness. Post-traumatic growth doesn't just repair what's broken. It invites us to reimagine, reinvent, and recreate a whole new narrative that includes the wounds of our past as well as the wisdom hidden within. How do we do that? How do we move from crisis to growth, from breakdown to breakthrough? Well, my 5-stage model has helped so many of my patients make sense of their trauma, process it, and grow from it. There's nothing linear about the healing process and no set time frame. While the stages do build upon each other, you're not marching through them, checking off the boxes as you go. You may linger in one place for a while until you're ready to move on. Something may come up in stage 3 and you need to go back to stage 2 and ask for help. You might be able to acknowledge one painful experience that happened years ago, but not another. Your process is unique to you. Awareness, radical acceptance. The first step is to admit to yourself that you're in pain and you can no longer pretend everything is okay. Your coping mechanisms aren't working. You feel helpless, hopeless, and stuck. You realize you don't have the emotional tools to handle what's happening alone. Awakening, safety and protection. You begin to seek out a person you can trust in a place where you feel safe enough to express your feelings without shame or blame, moving away from the people and places that trigger you. This is the stage where you feel validated, acknowledged, and recognized. Becoming a new narrative. From a place of safety, you begin to imagine new ways of thinking, doing, and being in the world. You're gathering information, making plans, and trying on new identities to see what fits. You've begun to rewrite your story, one in which you are unburdened by your traumatic past. Being integration. Once you've settled on a new set of beliefs and values, you're ready to test drive this new self out in the world. You feel more confident and understand that you are you because of all you've been through. As you begin to integrate the past event with your new narrative, it may look something like, I'm a survivor of childhood abuse, and I'm also a loving partner and a good friend and successful in my career. Transforming wisdom and growth. With a clearer sense of identity and belonging, you begin to have more meaningful relationships. You feel confident, connected, and engaged in the world. Because of all you've experienced, you now know what your priorities are, and you may feel called to share what you've learned with others. Patients tell me at this stage that they've grown spiritually, found their true purpose, and become more compassionate, active members of their communities. Post-traumatic growth doesn't mean you'll never feel frightened or heartbroken again. After all, life is messy and unpredictable. The key to continued growing is to stay open, flexible, and curious. To consciously and lovingly connect your body, mind, and spirit to others in your life and to something greater than yourself. You can do this. How do I know? Because I've seen such transformation in every person, family, and community who has shown up fully committed to doing the work. They have transformed their trauma into growth. You have too. It's no longer a life sentence, but the beginning of a wiser, more meaningful, and connected life. Edith Shiro, PSYD, is a clinical psychologist in a private practice in Miami and the author of The Unexpected Gift of Trauma. She is a board member of the World Happiness Foundation and was awarded the Health Innovation Award 2023 for outstanding service in healthcare. You can find more at DREDITHSHIRO.com. Parts of this article were edited due to time. Over in culture and news, what happened to Robin Roberts' arm? All about her tennis wrist injury and recovery. This article is by Corinne Miller. If you're a faithful Good Morning America watcher, you may have noticed that Robin Roberts wasn't on the air on April 29th. Now she's back and filling people in on what happened. The 63-year-old revealed on April 30th that she has a bandaged wrist, which she blamed on a tennis injury. After watching a paddle tennis segment on the show, which is a mix of squash and tennis, Robert's co-anchor, George Stephanopoulos, joked that he didn't want you to get upset seeing that tennis on the screen, adding, "I know you had a little spill this weekend." Roberts showed off her bandaged wrist and joked, "Oh, no, no, you should have seen the other guy. I mean, I tried to uppercut." But Roberts then shared that she took a little tumble on the tennis court. "Maybe I'll take up paddle. Maybe that'll be my sport," she added. Roberts also joked that she was seeing rainbows after saying she couldn't confirm or deny if she was on pain medication. By the way, Roberts is a former college athlete, and she shared on Instagram that this is her first fracture. "All my years of being a competitive athlete, my first fracture and hopefully my last one as well," she said in a video shot in her dressing room. She followed that with a morning message and a prayer saying, "When it's your time, doors are going to open, freedom will come, healing will show up, and good breaks will find you." Robert said in her IG caption that she was playing a little hurt, but ready to work. The longtime co-host later revealed on GMA that she hurt her wrist because she was still clutching her racket when she fell over on the court. "If you have the racket and you fall, drop the racket or this could happen," she joked. "Feel better, Robin." Still in culture and news, Princess Kate shares adorable portrait she took for daughter Charlotte's 9th birthday. The little princess is all grown up. This article is by Rosa Sanchez. Princess Charlotte is 9. On May 2nd, the young royal celebrated her birthday alongside her family members, including mom Princess Catherine, dad Prince William, and brothers George 10 and Louis 6. To mark the date, Kate and William shared a new portrait of their daughter, taken by the Princess of Wales herself on their social media channels. In the lovely image, Charlotte is seen leaning up against a flower bush in a garden at the Wales Adelaide Cottage in Windsor Home Park, smiling candidly at the camera. She wears a navy sweater top, layered over a frilly white and blue shirt, paired with a blue denim skirt and navy tights. She stays warm in a raspberry red knit cardigan. "Happy 9th birthday, Princess Charlotte," the Waleses captioned the post. They added, "Thank you for all of the kind messages today." A Kensington Palace spokesperson confirmed to Harper's Bazaar that the photo was taken at Windsor in the last few days and has not been edited. Kate, a self-proclaimed amateur photographer, regularly takes photos of the family. For son Prince Louis's 6th birthday on April 23rd, she also released a portrait, which she'd taken as well, of the little prince. As Bizarre has reported, Kate has been lying low and spending time at home with William and their kids as she undergoes treatment for cancer. In a personal video message on March 22nd, she revealed that during abdominal surgery in January, doctors detected cancer in her body and due to that started her on preventative chemotherapy. Kate said the diagnosis came as a huge shock to her and to William, but more than anything, she explained, it has taken us time to explain everything to George, Charlotte, and Louis in a way that's appropriate for them, and to reassure them that I'm going to be okay. Despite it all, she said she is doing well and feeling stronger every day. She is focused on making a full recovery. Here's one of Oprah's recommended best-scented candles. One is the Nest Fragrances Votive Candle in Ocean Mist and Sea Salt. Feel that ocean breeze even in the comfort of your home with this heavenly scent from the popular candle brand, combining the essence of a gentle ocean mist with hints of sea salt, white tea, and coconut. The candle has a burn time of 20 hours, and it's $18 on Amazon. And we have Lemarian's Bazaar Palo Santo and Sage Handmade Soy Candle. Whether it's time to rid your space of stale energy or start anew, this handmade soy wax candle has notes of soothing scents like Palo Santo and sage. It brings a calming warmth to any room of your house. And it's $22 on Amazon. And one more, the Bohème Fragrances Amalfi Mini Tin Votive Candle. Bring a touch of Mediterranean serenity to your space with Bohème's Amalfi-scented candle featuring notes of bergamot, lemon, lavender, and cedarwood. This handmade candle offers 15 hours of burn time, and it's $15 at bohemafragrances.com. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.